1 FM.
Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Thursday. I've got a question for you. Can you believe it's February? February 1st, 2024. It's amazing, especially when you consider the temperatures. But none of that matters if you can't see the calendar or if you can't see the thermometer. Can anybody see anything through this fog? It is extremely dense in some spots, and because the temperature is either side of 32 where you are, that could make things a little slick on the roads. So please drive with caution today whenever you're heading out during these early morning hours. Coming up this morning, we're going to turn the page on the calendar here to February and note the arrival of Black History Month with advice to focus on the many productive, informative, and entertaining events planned around Wisconsin, and not so much on a legislature led by those who can't quit their efforts to divide people and whitewash history. And we're even going to learn a new term that is being used to somehow defend the efforts to ignore systemic racism in our society. We'll talk to Joe Zepecki to discuss some of this week's top political happenings. In our second hour, Kristen Lyerly will have our weekly segment, Women Win Wisconsin. We'll be talking to State Representative Jody Emerson of Eau Claire. And we will continue our interviews with candidates in the 3rd Congressional District. Coming up today, it's Rebecca Cook at 7:05 this morning. She's a candidate in the 3rd District, part of three different campaigns and candidates that we'll be talking to over the course of the week. We talked to Representative Katrina Shanklin yesterday, Rebecca Cook today, and then Eric Wilson tomorrow at 7:05. So we have a lot coming up, not to mention Luke Mathers will preview some of the upcoming shows across the Civic Media Radio Network, and meteorologist Brittany Merlot will be here to talk about the fog and the temperatures and everything else that makes up our weather forecast. As we get, it's just, Greg, it's not sounding, it just feels weird to say it's February because it has certainly not felt like it, but there you are in Waukesha feeling it too.
It's me in Waukesha, 36 degrees and no fog.
Do you not have fog there? Okay.
No fog just, whatsoever. Yeah. I will say this.
That's good.
Just coming into Waukesha this morning, very slippery.
Mm-hmm.
I came to a stop right by my old high school, CMH, and I almost went right through a stop sign.
Ooh. Yeah, we don't want that.
Yeah.
No.
So if you're in the Waukesha area, watch your driving and just be safe.
Yes, that is definitely the advisory that's out there today. This fog, where it does exist or even where it doesn't, the temperatures being what they are, could make things a little treacherous out there. It is exactly 32 right here on Lake Wissota. Hayward's at 22, Park Falls 29, Wausau's 29. Green Bay is at 33 degrees, La Crosse 31, Wisconsin Rapids 33, Oshkosh 35, Madison 31 degrees right now. And yes, again, it's 36 degrees in Waukesha. So by all means, take it easy out there on the roads, but also on the sidewalks as well. Can't emphasize that enough. As you know, when we talked to Selena Heller the other day about her slipping on the ice injury. So we just as soon not have any of that happening if we can possibly avoid it. So we will have quite a bit in terms of political coverage today, as we often do, because things are being talked about in the state capitol. You still have a flurry of activity in the nation's capital as well, and on a couple of different fronts. One we've talked about already, the prospect for a bipartisan bill to increase border security, and yet there are some Republicans that don't want that to happen until after the election. So, you know, they can continue ginning up the so-called emergency without doing anything about it. Well, now the same thing appears to be happening with a tax bill. There are some tax cuts that were passed in 2017 that will be expiring, and the possibility is out there to either extend them or let them go. But again, there are some Republicans who were saying on right-wing TV yesterday, might not want to pass that tax bill, don't want to give Biden a win. And we heard this from Republicans in the legislature about things, didn't want to give Tony Evers a win. That's not how this works, this governing thing. It's your job to actually govern, to pass legislation, to reach agreement, to compromise, and not simply to have power for the sake of being power. So I'm going to be wondering out loud for the foreseeable future, as long as bills like these are being bottled up, why are we paying you? I mean, if you don't want to do the work, why should you get paid? You're the people who keep saying nobody wants to work. And it turned out that was projection. You were telling on yourself the entire time that the ones who aren't working are the ones in these Capitol buildings who have the chance to do something for regular folks and maybe help bolster education and help strengthen healthcare and are doing nothing about that. Speaking of healthcare, a bank robbery in Green Bay is tied to the continuing failure of some politicians to expand and strengthen health care for all Americans. From the Green Bay Press Gazette, a 63-year-old Green Bay man who told police he robbed a bank about a year ago so he could receive medical care while in custody pleaded guilty to the crime on Wednesday. Mark Vogel was convicted of robbing the BMO Harris Bank on Military Avenue. Vogel waited until just before closing time a year ago. Afterwards, after the robbery, which was done very quietly with one younger teller, he simply stood outside the bank, eventually telling police he wanted to get caught because he does not have health insurance and deals with multiple health issues. He said he even avoided going to an older bank teller to avoid frightening that person and instead went to the younger teller. After the teller gave him the money, Vogel said he apologized if he had scared him. The teller told police that when Vogel demanded the money, Vogel also asked if the bank was insured by the FDIC because he wanted to make sure nobody was actually going to be losing money as part of this scheme to get arrested so he could get health care coverage. Vogel has been at the Brown County Jail since the day of his arrest, held in lieu of $10,000 bail that he's not able to post. Vogel's sentencing hearing is scheduled for June 4th. He faces a maximum sentence of 40 years in prison or a fine of $100,000. And wouldn't that be the greatest injustice of all if the judge said, no, we're actually not going to put you in prison, but we are going to fine you $100,000. I mean, then he'd have to go rob a bank again to try to pay it. I'm actually quite surprised this doesn't happen a little bit more often. But when it comes up, you have to highlight it to show what we're dealing with here, as opposed to people like Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley is the one I've got here, who told a reporter that a bipartisan tax bill shouldn't pass before November. He said, quote, "I think passing a tax bill makes the president look good, mailing out checks before the election. It means he could be reelected and then he wouldn't extend the 2017 tax cuts." So you're saying that you don't want checks to go out with Joe Biden's name on them before the election. Do you mean like what happened with the pandemic relief checks, the ones that were delayed until they could make sure that they could be printed with Donald Trump's name on the checks? You remember that? You did that. You did that already. So when you're saying, well, there might be checks that go out with Joe Biden's name, yeah, that's quite possible. Though that's not really what the plan is about. The plan is not about sending checks. The plan is about making the tax code more fair to the middle class and not to the, you know, upper crust, which has 2017 tax cuts that are baked in permanently. So that's what we're facing out there in Washington and in Madison, and things that we'll continue to talk more about in the coming days here. But let's take a look at sports now at 6:15. The Milwaukee Bucks went back to Portland. Damian Lillard went back to Portland, I should say, for the first time since he was traded to the Bucks in the offseason. Lillard was the beloved face of the Blazers franchise for his first 11 seasons in the NBA, and the Trail Blazers beat the Bucks 119 to 116. Lillard finished with 25 points. Giannis Antetokounmpo added 27, but the Bucks are now 0-2 under new head coach Doc Rivers. There was a lot of love in the room for Lillard. One kid held up a sign that said, "Go get your ring and then come back home." They do miss him there. And the Bucks, meanwhile, will travel to Dallas, continuing this road trip. They will be playing in Dallas on Saturday. The Badger men's basketball team, sixth ranked in the country, will be playing tonight at Nebraska. 7:30 is tip-off time. And you can catch those games on locally grown radio, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, News from the Center in Richland Center, Lake Air in Amory, and WRJN in Racine. And you can listen through the Civic Media app. Head over to civicmedia.us to learn more about that. Let's see, the ninth-ranked Marquette men's basketball team next plays at Georgetown on Saturday. The Badger women's basketball team is at Ohio State tonight. And the Marquette women's basketball team lost to 22nd-ranked Creighton last night in Nebraska, 76-71. They next play at Providence on Saturday afternoon. And I can also tell you, Greg, that the Packers have a new defensive coordinator. Jeff Hafley, the head coach of Boston College, will be the Packers' new defensive coordinator. And according to social media, they're already blaming him for the Packers' next loss. It hasn't happened yet, but whenever it does, the hashtag is already out there. Hashtag fire Jeff Hafley. So,
hey-o.
You can't make the Packer fans happy. That's not without reason. Joe Barry had some weak points, shall we say, on defense.
Yeah.
So, maybe next year we end up blaming somebody else whenever we lose a game.
Let's just keep blaming Joe Barry. It's a residue. It's a residue.
Some people still think it's we can blame Dom Capers, his predecessor. That this is where
Dom Capers still alive?
Yeah, he's somewhere.
I just fear the eulogies.
Oh my goodness.
Hey Pat, really quick question for you. Who are the Badger girls playing again? They're playing who?
Where did I say? Well, hold on, let me get down to it. And did you say Badger girls?
Badger women. Sorry. I'm 46.
At Ohio State tonight.
Oh, never mind. I thought you said Creighton. My mistake.
No, the Marquette women lost at Creighton last night.
Oh, did you know that school has its own little store of trinkets and whatnot? It's called Creighton Barrel.
This seems like a good time to bring up the music and pause for about 60 seconds.
Yeah.
And tell you that you're listening to Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network. The thing is, Neil Sedaka's Laughter in the Rain could actually apply when it's this much above freezing in places. This Neil Sedaka hit was the number one song this day in 1975, and we will have more musical memories coming up in today's history lesson in just a little bit. First, a reminder that the Up North News daily newsletter is out. You can sign up for it over at our website, upnorthnewswi.com. There are some significant milestones as part of Black History Month that are mentioned in today's newsletter. Also, some winter getaway ideas for when winter does return, and it will. I feel pretty good making that decision or that prediction. Also, tonight on Fox, the second season of Farmer Wants a Wife will premiere. And in the newsletter, we talk about how 25-year-old Grace Girard from Caledonia is one of the contestants vying for a country boy's heart on Farmer Wants a Wife, which is going to make its premiere tonight. Can't say that I watched season one, Greg. Can pretty well predict comfortably won't be watching season two as I watch these yahoos in their fancy cowboy hats, which nobody wears on a farm in Wisconsin. But, you boo-boo.
Is that true? I don't I don't know much about. I always wanted a cowboy hat. I really do. I want a cowboy hat.
The nice thing about having a daughter living out in the Mountain West in Idaho, and she married a cowboy. She married a real cowboy, somebody who was actually on their high school rodeo team.
I'm
because
jealous.
They have high school rodeo teams. Well, that was my excuse to get a cowboy hat, and I got a nice black one, and it looks good. But you wear it around Wisconsin, and people look at you like, who are you trying to be? You know, but you wear it out there, you blend right in. But, you know, on a farm here, what are you wearing? You're wearing, you know, more like baseball caps, oftentimes something that you get from your local co-op or, you know, from the milk truck driver, you know, who hands them out.
You
or
mean
what
communists handing out hats to all the people?
No, they're just little trinkets, little gifts. But cowboy hats, not so much.
Pat, I'm going to say this to you right now.
Yes.
You want to wear your cowboy hat, and I'm serious. Wear your cowboy hat. Don't let anyone look at you funny. You do what you want.
You know, I actually do wear it on snowy days.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a nice, it's got the wide brim and it keeps it out of your face and, you know. So yeah, it is nice. One of these days we'll do hat day.
Ooh.
It's just really tough with these headphones, you know, to pull it off.
So. I'm going to buy a cowboy hat now because I've got my excuse. I went to Texas last year and nobody had cowboy hats on and I was really disappointed.
No.
So now I have my reason. Yes.
Excellent.
And then we'll watch Farmer Needs a Wife and we'll do weekly updates.
Look, if that's what we got to do, you know, for the way we bow at the altar of content, we're going to get content from Farmer Wants a Wife.
I just think
right. I'm just saying, I'm married to a farmer's daughter, and she may give us the best lines as we watch this thing, and every one of them is going to be derisive, and I am here for it.
I just think it's funny, like, nothing against the young lady. I'm glad Wisconsin is represented. But it's also like, you know, the farmland country of Caledonia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or as they call it, suburban Racine.
Yeah. So we'll see how. Sherry was looking at the promo. It came on a few times during football games and such. And she's just like, oh, she's looking at some of these girls going, no, you are not going to last a day doing actual farm work.
Her eyes couldn't roll back further in her head.
Oh, my goodness. Well, people, you know, many people do appreciate how hard you're working on the farm, including the kids, including the girls. Others, not so much. They think of, remember Paris Hilton? Had that reality show where she and somebody else were, you know, working on a farm.
Nicole Richie.
Yep. There's much more to it than you would think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Also in the newsletter today, my column on Black History Month, and let me share some of the notes of that with you, because if you go to anywhere on your Google machine and Google up Black History Month 2024 in Wisconsin, I mean, listen to the things that There are going to be luncheons and dinners in places like Green Bay and De Pere, public speakers in Kakana. There's going to be a mobile museum. There will be Afro hair fairs, an ebony ball. There will be a presentation at Marquette titled Things Your History Teacher Didn't Teach You About Blacks in History. In Madison, there will be movie nights and book discussions and story hours for children. Events in Oshkosh range from a hip-hop fitness class to trivia contests to gospel choir performances. There's a Black women-owned business expo planned for Beloit. And in Eau Claire, you can see a presentation on Black history through the arts. In other words, no shortage of opportunities to commemorate and celebrate or simply gain appreciation for Black History Month. You should expect some great discussions, spirited debates, reasons why heads will be bowed, and reasons why heads will be held high. Just keep all of that positive potential in mind. Conversely, do not put a lot of stock in the Wisconsin legislature if it again gets bogged down in acrimony over something as simple as passing a Black History Month resolution. Now, while a resolution did pass last year, in March, after Black History Month was over, there were several years where Republicans blocked any action because they wanted to dictate to the Legislative Black Caucus who could and could not be mentioned in such a resolution. And yes, predictably, a lot of the pearl clutching centered on Wisconsin's own Colin Kaepernick. So this week in the legislature, Republicans held a hearing on a resolution that would ask voters to amend the state constitution to say that government entities, quote, may not discriminate against or grant preferential treatment to any individual or group on the basis of race, sex, color, ethnicity, or national origin in public employment, public education, public contracting, or public administration. In other words, racism is solved. There's no need to do anything anymore that addresses biases, shortcomings, poor outcomes, whitewashed history lessons. You can expect to once again hear in that building wild conspiracies entwined in acronyms CRT, DEI, BLM. And take count of how many lawmakers prove once again that the content of their character line from Martin Luther King is still the only King quote they have ever bothered to learn. In fact, if you still have it there, Greg, let's play from Eric Wimberger, legislator from the Green Bay area, what he said in a hearing. And then you're also going to hear Democratic State Senator Jeff Smith from Eau Claire ask him, what are you talking about when you bring up a certain term? Let's play a little bit of this.
One of the main effects that this bill will have is that it will put race hustlers out of business and that will stop this graft on on people's suffering. So racism is a problem, and it probably is something that will exist in the ether, and it will never go away to a degree where we can manage it if what we do fundamentally in our policies is very consciously decide that a black man ought to get what a black man deserves and a white man ought to get what a white man deserves. And then we have some sort of lords in institutions deciding if things are shaken out right and equitably. The focus needs to be on the effects of these things, and then obviously work on education on the other side of it, but to reaffirm and re-entrench all of the fundamental principles of racism by talking about how one person deserves one thing or another based on their race will never solve the problem.
And then what we'll do, because we're going to break here, we'll say that Jeff Smith just responds with race hustlers and ask him to define it. More along the way. Joseph Pecky's next. Well, hey, look who's back. It's Joseph Pecky, everybody. After a little bit of time on a business trip. Because, again,
right.
we can only make up so many rumors about you and the Bucks, but we'll get to that a little bit later on. How are you?
I did coach a game at Fiserv Forum this week.
Did you really now?
The fifth grade basketball team I coached got to play against a team of fifth and sixth graders from Bellin, Wisconsin, at the house that Giannis built. It was a great time. Kids were over the moon.
So your coaching record at Fiserv Forum is actually better than Doc Rivers at this point because of the Bucks road trip.
Well, it's because there is one. Yes. We did come up just short, so I'm 0-1 at Fiserv.
Oh, okay.
But, as my fifth grade boys were saying, to lose by 2 points to a team with fifth and sixth graders mm-hmm. basically means we won.
It does. All right. Great job, team. Way to go. So last week, we did not get to talk to you in the aftermath of Governor Evers' State of the State address. So I just want to come back to that briefly. We got the report since that time that what once was a $7 billion surplus is now down to $3.25 billion. But still, that's plenty to work with for some kind of an agenda. We heard the governor's agenda last week. Where do you think we're going to be by the time this legislative session gavels out and goes home to campaign for the rest of the year?
Well, that's very soon, I'm sure you've discussed with your listeners. The notion that the legislature is going to be done for the year in February is pretty bizarre. It kind of begs the question why we even have a full-time legislature. Listen, I think they're going to be able to get something done on taxes. I think given what I'm seeing in terms of, local reporting and school districts around the state needing to go to referendum, carrying some of this over into the next budget to address the hardship facing school districts in every corner of the state might be another good use to invest in our young people, invest in students. But I know that I might be the first person to raise that. But man, given the number of school districts that have to go to referendum, it's crazy. It's just astonishing.
I am fascinated by this observation because literally for years now we have said Republicans are not in any rush to touch the surplus because they were hoping Tim Michaels would win and they could do something more like, you know, massive tax cuts for the very rich. And now comes the argument that, well, maybe after these new maps are in and you have a legislature that might be a bit more moderate, now you have some of a surplus that can be used toward, you know, things more in line with what most Wisconsinites would want. So that's interesting.
Stay tuned. I also think the very notion that there are new maps coming may have the effect of making the legislature more responsive to the needs and wants and wishes of the people of Wisconsin on any number of issues, be that raising the minimum wage, at some form of cannabis, be that, you know, medicinal at minimum. We have fallen behind other states and in very real ways. And, you know, the notion that some of these folks might have tougher districts, maybe, just maybe, that'll, you know, loosen the ketchup jar just enough that we see something.
But before they embraced at least a more moderate stances, they had to try one more time to protect themselves, their own political butts, by trying to draw new maps that the governor vetoed this week because they explicitly protect Republican incumbents, which, again, I don't even know why they would be that explicit about it. I don't know that I see even a messaging advantage to that.
There wasn't. It's sheer terror and single-minded, self-interested attempts to try and govern. And the Republicans did this to themselves. The notion that politicians would trot out there and say, "This is my district? No, ma'am. No, sir. These districts belong to the people of Wisconsin." And they walked right into the word, like saying the quiet part out loud, which stands in contrast to what Democrats have been saying for years. Politicians shouldn't pick their voters. Voters should pick their politicians. That's what it means to live in a representative democracy like we do. So I thought it was a real unforced error by Republicans. There was never any way that Governor Evers was going to torpedo the process playing out in the state Supreme Court. So desperation comes to mind, but you'd have to ask a Republican.
Sure. Well, along those same lines has been the talk all week now about a bipartisan border security agreement, where there seemed to be a lot more Republicans on board last week than this week. The difference being former President Trump saying that they should kill any kind of a deal. So I guess it begs the question, what border emergency? I don't know if it rises to the level of unforced error, but it certainly rises to the level of, again, saying the quiet part out loud, which is, I would think, going to alienate some middle-of-the-road voters.
The hypocrisy is staggering, even by Republican members of the House of Representatives standard. So for listeners who are unaware, Republicans months ago said no new money for Ukraine to stop the Russian invasion, no new money for Israel and Gaza, unless we get a border security bill passed. That was months ago. They locked arms. Republicans said, this is the deal. You want money for protecting a free people in Ukraine to give them the arms and munitions they need to, you know, to stop an invading army? You got to deal with border security. So Democrats came to the table in good faith and have been negotiating what sounds like would be one of the toughest border security bills in American history, if not the most, you know, like strongest border security bill. And now you have Republicans who have been saying for months that there is a crisis at the southern border, that this has to be addressed immediately, are now saying two things. The first thing they're saying is, we don't want a deal. Why? I don't know. Apparently it's not actually a crisis.
Yeah.
They're playing politics because Donald Trump would rather run on the issue. The second thing they're saying is as crazy, which is that the president has all the authorities he needs. Really? Because every time President Trump tried to do something at the border, it didn't stand up in the courts. So clearly the chief executive needs more authorities at the border. Donald Trump didn't solve this problem when he was president, and he had a Republican Congress for 2 years. Now they're expecting Joe Biden to just create out of whole cloth new authorities to secure the border when he is saying, no, we need a bill. Send me a bill and I'll sign it. And Republicans are saying, well, actually, no, we just want the issue to run on. It's disgusting. It's disappointing. And I guess we shouldn't be all that surprised, given the number of times that Republicans have pulled this kind of thing based on the most conservative MAGA elements of the House conference.
Interestingly enough, you have, again, Derek Van Orden going along with that line of thinking, you know, saying that he won't be any part of this bipartisan deal that they're working on. And you have Senator Tammy Baldwin, who's actually been putting out, you know, quite a bit of communication about trying to at least work on the part of the deal that would try to stem all of the shipments of fentanyl and some of its, you know, precursor chemicals into the border. So you see somebody trying to get some work done. And the people who originally said we want the work done are now saying, oh, you know, we can wait. It just seems so puzzling.
It really begs the question, what do these people think their job is? Right? Did Derek Van Orden go to Congress to deal with issues and to make improvements for the lives of his constituents? Or did he go to be a part of a reality TV show that's all about ratings and clicks and contributions? Because you cannot, with a straight face, if you are a Republican in the House like Derek Van Orden, say there is absolutely nothing worth doing out of one side of your mouth and say we're being invaded or the other vile, ridiculous things they say, and then it's a crisis at the southern border. They're there to legislate. That is their job. And Republicans are paying a price, I think, that's kind of their own making. For years, they have demagogued on this issue. They have ignored the fact that it's still a good thing that people want to come here. It's because America is the envy of the world, and people want the American dream for themselves. Do we have problems? Absolutely. Challenges as a people in a country? Yes, no question. But it's still the best place in the world to live and work and raise a family. And by the way, you want to grow an economy? You need immigrants. They don't want to talk about any of that. They have demagogued this to the point where the Oklahoma Republican Party is threatening to withdraw all support from Senator James Lankford, who is the Republican senator at the negotiating table. And oh, by the way, this is a guy the American Conservative Union awarded as the second most conservative member of the United States Senate. This ain't a squish. This ain't a rhino. James Lankford is as conservative as the day is long. And he knows his job is to come to the table and see what's possible. And the part that, like, you know, Derek Van Orden and members of the Republican Conference, I want them to answer this question. Just because you might come to the table and negotiate and vote for a bill now, does that mean that you wouldn't be able to do that if the world turned out the way you wanted to, and in January of next year, there was a Republican Congress and a Republican president? No, of course not. They could come back and do more if they wanted to. The fact that they're unwilling to do anything gives away the game, which is that they view it as a game and not a serious issue, and it's maddening.
So keeping it on electoral politics for a moment here, the question of Dean Phillips running on the Democratic side, challenging Joe Biden, and not initially being on the ballot and now asking the state Supreme Court to intervene, I ask you, does Dean Phillips have a case to be on the Wisconsin ballot?
No. He had a process to follow. The first part of it was asking the state party to get him on. Nope. We have an incumbent Democratic president. That wasn't where it ended. Dean Phillips could have gotten 1,000 signatures from each of Wisconsin's congressional districts and got himself on the ballot, and he chose not to. Those are the rules. Whether you like them or not, you got to play by them. That's what we've been talking about for years. And part of the threat of Trump is that he's disregarding the rules, not just the rule of law, but executive power rules, executive authority rules. He thinks the rules don't apply to him. And the notion that Dean Phillips is going to come in here and say, well, the rules shouldn't apply to me either. Okay, that he is now telling Democrats in Wisconsin something.
Mm-hmm. All right. We left just enough time, left you a minute or so to ask about Doc Rivers and the Bucks. And I know they're on this big road trip right now. But so it's not so much about the current performance, but the long-term outlook. What are you thinking, having Doc Rivers on that bench now?
I'm excited. I give a lot of credit to the Bucks front office. It is really a difficult thing to make that big a change in the midst of a season where you are winning a lot of games, right? I mean, I think there were 30 and 13 when they made the change, and it needed to be made. It ought to have been made, and we should still give credit where credit is due, because, you know, like, look at the, let's use the Packers as an example, right? 10 games into the season, it was pretty clear Joe Barry needed to go, and we needed a new defensive coordinator. Rather than make the change in the middle of the season, they stuck with him through the season and then let him go. So this doesn't happen every day with sports franchises making big in-season moves. Doc has his work cut out for him, and, you know, something had to change. I'm glad something did change. I still think we need to be buyers at the trade deadline and try to get some more defensive help, because that's the side of the ball where we're potentially in trouble in any playoff matchup.
Well, I mean, somebody in this conversation knew that from the very get-go, and it's been very interesting watching everybody come along and say, even with a good record, there seems to be something lacking here on defense. So, you know, you can call yourself a political strategist or an analyst or whatever, but you really ought to consider the sports gig as well.
Well, if I can get a few more W's with these fifth graders, who knows? Maybe the sky's the limit.
That could be it. Joe Zepecki, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Talk to you next week.
I don't know. I'm thinking that you know, his insight on the Bucks has been as such that we're just going to have to make that more of a regular thing here. And goodness knows he likes to talk about it. And by the way, when I talked to his wife Melissa Baldoff the day before on our climate check, I completely forgot that she is a huge fan of the 49ers. And so next week we will definitely be getting into that, because of course there's this 2-week break heading into the Super Bowl. 2 weeks of talking about Taylor Swift and the 49ers and the Usher halftime show. Greg, I might need an intervention sometime during these next 2 weeks of inane conversation to prep for the
Super Bowl.
I won't
be helping. I'll be talking about it too. Yeah.
it is what we do. Today's history lesson is coming up next. You're up north. If you're expecting to hear MC Hammer come up in a minute, you're too young. Turn the dial. No, this is Rick James time.
You're in your mid to late 30s. Get off the radio.
That's right. That's it. You kids, get off my lawn. No, this is the original. This is Rick James, born this day in 1948. Passed away in 2004, giving us Super Freak to welcome in Dr. Kristen Lyerly to the program. Dr. Lyerly, good morning.
Good morning. I'm way too busy dancing over here.
I know.
It's a very thin piece of ice you do when you play Super Freak. You're like, and welcome, Dr. Lyerly.
I was trying to decide which of you was super freakier.
Let's make clear there are no accidents on this show when we're picking bumper music. So, how are you?
I'm all right.
You are all right.
Richard just said, she's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah, just like that. Uh-huh. On this day in 1945, RCA introduced the 45, a smaller vinyl record playing at 45 revolutions per minute. Again, if you never played a 45, again, you're skewing far too young for grandpa here. There was higher audio quality than the 33 and a third, but it's also why we have what's called singles, as only one song could fit on one side. I knew people that had dozens, if not a couple of hundred of singles, because you could get them for whatever it was, 99 cents or something back in the day. I didn't have as many of those. There's my old man bell. Kristen, did you have 45s, or were you more of a cassette era baby?
I still have 45s, and it always makes me think of that little thing in the middle of your turntable that you had to either pull up or put on so that you could adjust your record player from the little tiny hole to the 45 hole.
The little plastic adapter, the little doohickey. Yes, those were everywhere. I know. Let's see. We already mentioned that Laughter in the Rain by Neil Sedaka was the number one hit this day in 1975. The Beatles' I Want to Hold Your Hand was number one this day in 1964. Look what happened. Can this really be 20 years ago today?
Yeah.
The infamous wardrobe malfunction at the Super Bowl. Here's a little bit of what it sounded like as Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson were singing. And then, of course, the song ends with the infamous wardrobe malfunction. And I was having a Super Bowl party in the basement at the time. And I just remember all, whatever, two dozen of us, whatever, just everybody's like, what just happened there?
Yeah. Some say that
was it really a malfunction.
I don't think it was, you know, but because when you can create some outrage, you can create some buzz, you know. I think that's what it was. I don't like to be cynical that way, but that's how I felt about
some
it.
Some people have said that poisoned Janet Jackson's career after that. And I
isn't
know
that
people
funny that
I know people who haven't forgiven
the one
Justin.
That got, right. She's the one that essentially, I won't say blackballed, but, you know, was harmed more by it. Justin was like, hey, look what Justin did. All right.
He was Justin Timberlake, a 24-year-old white kid. No one's going to touch him.
No.
The dick in the box guy.
yes, that guy
can
do no wrong. On this day in 1969, the number one song is by Tommy James and the Shondells.
Crimson and clover. That song's hard to
very
listen
mellow.
To.
It's
very
really
mellow.
Hard when it gets to the.
Yeah, because all the guitars are on the left. You're like,
oh, that's right. Oh. Yes. It was. Who did the remake? Joan Jett.
Joan Jett.
Love the Joan Jett remake. Have to remember to play that when it's her birthday or something here. Let's see. Here's birthdays to tell you about. Clark Gable was born this day in 1901. Do you realize he died in 1960 at the age of 59?
I wasn't
He'd
alive.
He had a heart attack.
Either.
Yeah, 59 from, you know, Rhett Butler from Gone with the Wind. Don Everly of the Everly Brothers was born this day in 1937.
I love that.
He passed away a couple of years ago at the age of 84. Lisa Marie Presley. She was born 56 years ago today, but passed away 1 year ago. And happy 29th birthday to Harry Styles.
Come on, Harry. We want to say goodnight to you.
He is only 29.
Yes.
Ding, 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 ding. That's your old man, Val Greg.
No, it's not so much like I'm not going to go shouting at the clouds. I feel so unsuccessful right now.
On this day in 1994, again, how is this 30 years ago? Green Day released their third album, Dookie, which was the first to play on a major record label. We'll play a cut from that later on this morning. Sadly, this day in 2003 was when the shuttle Columbia disintegrated during its re-entry, killing all seven astronauts aboard. And let's see, on the national calendar today, this is National Freedom / Abolition of Slavery Day. This is National Car Insurance Day, National Baked Alaska Day, National Change Your Password Day, Dark Chocolate Day, Optimist Day, World Hijab Day, and Spunky Old Broads Day. And Kristen Lyerly joins us now from Green Bay to talk more about...
Dumb ways to die.
Here's our trivia from Roger putting up on Facebook. Neil Sedaka is the only artist to have a top 20 single in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. Not a surprise.
Where were you in the 90s, Neil?
Prolific.
Fail.
Yeah. Yeah. So you talked about this event that you were going to hold, a nice event as people looked into potentially running for office, maybe for Congress in Northeast Wisconsin, maybe for legislature. And we've only got about a minute and a half here. So I think we're going to talk more about it at 7:30 in our Women Win Wisconsin segment with Representative Jody Emerson. But I see your senator from that area, Eric Wimberger, using a term called race hustlers. to justify this resolution that would ban pretty much anything that might be construed as helping address the problems of systemic racism. Kristen, I looked at race. How is Race Hustler used on social media? And it's ugly out there. I would dare say somebody needs to take away Eric Wimberger's TV remote before his vocabulary sinks to an even lower level.
Pat, thank you so much for bringing that to my attention, because Eric Wimberger just happens to be my senator. And he is a man who is out of touch with his constituents, especially me. So I'll look into this.
As well, you should. Then we're probably
Race Hustler? Come on.
I can send you the clip.
Please.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So we'll talk a bit about that with Jody Emerson and all the other things that are being worked on in the legislature and encouraging women to run for office here in 2024. We'll get Brittany Merlo's forecast, and we'll also have the next congressional candidate interview in the third CD with Rebecca Cook joining us right after this on the Civic Media Radio Network.